Stephen White had always liked the Patels who ran the great store near his office. They were such a hard-working couple, and yet they always had time to have a few words. Mrs. Patel once advised him what to take to a colleague who was in hospital. Stephen White had been going to buy her chocolates, but the busy little woman in her sari said that she thought a packet of cards with envelopes would be better, and then, if he were to get her a book of stamps as well, that would be perfection. It had, indeed, been a highly acceptable gift. The woman in the hospital bed had been surprised at receiving something so thoughtful. Foolishly, Stephen told her it was the suggestion of the woman in the mini-market. It seemed to diminish the gift. But Stephen was such a fair-minded person, he didn't want to take credit for an idea which was not his own. He'd always been that way. Not pushy enough, his father had said. But then nobody was pushy enough for Stephen's father, who had eventually pushed himself into a situation where he was prosecuted for fraud. Never stood up for himself, his sisters had said. And Wendy, the wife that he thought had loved him, had left him because she said that he would never light a fire under anyone, himself included. Stephen hadn't known he was meant to light fires under anyone. It hadn't been part of any original deal. He thought you went out and worked hard and earned money and stood behind other people in queues and waited your turn. He didn't know a new system had come in where you were meant to have a confrontation about everything and not to back down and not to lose face. And this, of course, was why he was in this situation just before Christmas. Redundant. His boss had been embarrassed. "There's no easy way to say this, Stephen, and no good time of year to say it," she had begun. He had looked at her blankly. "But of course, you must have seen it coming," she went on. Stephen hadn't seen it coming, and not on Christmas Eve. He had gone in at lunchtime to the Patel's store to buy his provisions for Christmas. As they gave him his receipt, they put his trolley away, having written S. White in large letters on cardboard for when he would collect it later. At that time, of course, Stephen thought he was a man with a job and a future. Not so when he came back after the news of the afternoon. This time he was like someone on autopilot. It was his first Christmas alone. He just had to pick up his shopping and face it. For the last 2 years since Wendy had left him, he had gone to his brother's house. But they played a lot of games there, things you had to be quick-witted about. It wasn't easy or relaxed. This year Stephen had thought he would make his own Christmas dinner. Get 2 frozen turkey breasts, one looked so sad. And you never knew who might join you. George in the office had said he might stroll by. Not a definite arrangement or anything, but just a possibility. Stephen had wanted to be prepared. He would get nice, easy foods like tins of custard and packets of mince pies and some packet soups and stuffings, things that you just had to add a little water to. Small gifts for the ladies in the apartments near him. They would like talcum powder and matching soap, he thought. He bent sadly over the trolley and brought it out to his car. He took the bags out, bag after bag, all with season's greetings written on them. He stacked them neatly in the boot. He knew that he had bought far too much. George wouldn't stroll by. Not tonight, or tomorrow. You didn't stroll to the house of a man who had just been sacked. There would be nothing to say. Grimly, Stephen continued loading his supplies into the car. But he didn't really look at them. Otherwise, he would have realised he had the wrong trolley. He was a person of regular habits and permanent rituals. Normally, he would have stored anything for the freezer on one side and cover it with a rug for greater insulation. But tonight, he didn't make any distinction. And he headed out in tears of failure as he drove the contents of Sarah White's trolley to the small apartment where he had lived since he and Wendy sold what was always called the marital home. Back at the office, the party would be in full swing. He had always, in his quiet way, enjoyed it on other Christmas Eves. He found a background from which to observe it all. It had been good-natured, if a little silly. But this year, they would all have been sympathising with him, assuring him he would get another job in no time. Better let them speculate about him behind his back. Wonder how poor Stephen was taking it all. He would come back after Christmas and tidy things up. She had said that he need not leave until some time that suited him, early, in the new year. Stephen opened the first package and discovered prawns in their shells. Well, now, the Patels were not as efficient as he had thought. They must have included a bag from someone else's trolley. Still, it was easy to do. He looked at the prawns, interested. They were so prehistoric, almost like dinosaurs, really. He wondered who could possibly cook and eat such things. Then the next bag had a leather handbag and a green scarf. There were jars of olives. Strange, crusty bread with a herby smell. It took Stephen White 5 whole minutes to realise that he had none of his careful shopping, that in fact he had been given totally the wrong trolley. But it had his name on it, back in the store, which was long closed now. And surely his credit card receipt must be in one of the bags. He rooted around to find it. And there it was, behind a little CD player that must have cost a fortune. But it was for Sarah White. That's what she had signed. Some crazed woman who must, by the amount of her bill and the look of her trolley, run an exotic restaurant and quite possibly a gift shop. What must she be thinking in some other part of the city as she looked for all these entirely inappropriate things that she had presumably assembled for herself and her family? And how was he going to find her? The credit card people wouldn't reveal her address on Christmas Eve. The Patels would have locked up and gone away. Suddenly, Stephen felt tired and sad. He sat at the kitchen table loaded with such unexpected things. A big tear splashed down on the coconut milk. He would never find Sarah White in the phone book. There was no point even in looking. She might be there under her husband's name. His Christmas was ruined because this stupid, stupid woman couldn't take the right trolley. But that wasn't really why the tear had fallen. The food didn't matter. Stephen White sat weeping in his kitchen on Christmas Eve, because at the age of 48 he was unemployed, and his wife had been gone for 3 years, and he had nobody and nothing to live for. There was a loud banging on the door. Stephen brushed his face and went to answer it. It was George from the office, with a bottle of wine and possibly quite drunk already. "I was strolling by," said George, who lived in another part of the city entirely, and had made the detour out of solidarity with a man who had just been sacked. George, ready with encouraging words for his unfortunate colleague, stared in amazement at all the food. "Imagine that! Well, I don't believe it." Hardly trusting his own eyes, George looked at Stephen and back at the food. Then a broad smile lit up his face. "Now I know why you didn't stay for the office party. You had your own little party to see to." Stephen saw the admiration on his friend's face. It was so easy to impress people with the right clothes and the occasional lie and someone else's stupid shopping. But Stephen couldn't take credit for Sarah White's extravagance. "George, there was a bit of a mix-up. This isn't..." "Don't worry, Stephen," said George, obviously miffed. "I wasn't pushing for an invitation, though it all looks very good." Stephen looked at all the food. Sarah White's shopping seemed out of place on his kitchen table. But George was right. It all looked very good. A shame to see it go to waste. "Well," said Stephen cheerfully, "if you don't stay for dinner, I'll have to eat all this by myself." George examined the ingredients, but it was the coconut milk with its complicated recipe that held his attention. "What are you going to make?" he asked. "A Thai curry?" "Yes," Stephen said suddenly, enjoying the expression on his friend's face. "I must say I do admire you, Stephen. A few of us wondered if you'd be all right. You looked a bit grey this afternoon. Wait until I tell them back at the office." George laughed easily as he drew the cork from the bottle of wine he had brought with him. "When will the party start?" It was all becoming increasingly unreal. Sitting here with a colleague, drinking a full-bodied red wine at a table covered with some woman's fancy shopping, having been sacked from his job. "What time did you tell them?" George wanted to know. "I didn't tell them," Stephen said. Come on, Stephen. We'd better get our skates on, start frying the mushrooms and the onions. But what for? Stephen begged. Well, as a base. Then we fry the chicken and stir in the green paste and the coconut milk. Of course, if you want to make the green curry for the prawns, well, that's fine. We'll do a red one for the chicken. But the people, I haven't asked anyone, Stephen cried. Well, definitely skates on then, Stephen. We'd better go round asking them. And in front of Stephen's horrified eyes, George from the office, carrying a glass of red wine and most certainly under the weather from the office party, went across the corridor and banged loudly on the door of Mrs. Johnson, pillar of the Residents' Association, undoubtedly the most difficult woman in the entire block of apartments. Stephen had brought her some talcum powder and a matching soap, hoping to get into her good books, and that she wouldn't glare at him quite so much. But because of that appalling Sarah White, whoever she was, he had no talcum powder for Mrs. Johnson. He only had an inebriated colleague, well, ex-colleague, hammering on the woman's door. Stephen felt slightly faint and closed his eyes. When he opened them, he saw, to his amazement, that Mrs. Johnson seemed to be having a perfectly normal conversation with George. She was even asking him what kind of a bottle she should bring. Anything at all, really, George was saying. Adds to the excitement. Stephen sat down beside the wreckage of the table and the greatly reduced wine bottle. He heard George's voice booming downstairs and excited cries coming from that quiet couple in number 16, who hardly ever looked up from the pavement to talk to you. The phone rang. He picked it up cautiously. It was a woman's voice. Stephen, she said.
Yes?
Stephen White? She sounded doubtful.
Oh, is that Sarah? He asked with real warmth in his voice.
I'm so glad you rang. Now, this terrible woman could come and take all her stuff and give him back what he wanted. What he had bought, in fact.
No. The voice sounded disappointed.
No, it's Wendy, actually.
Who's Sarah?
Wendy?
He couldn't have been more surprised.
Yes, well, season of goodwill and all that. I just thought I'd ring to know how you are.
I was sacked today, as it happens.
Best thing that could have happened to you, Wendy said. You were always too good for them, but you'd never leave. Now you can do something you'd enjoy.
Yes, well, Wendy was always very positive. No challenge too difficult for her.
Are you depressed and moping about it alone at home? She asked.
He thought for a moment. Wendy couldn't be doing all that much herself, as she had called him.
No, actually. I'm having a party shortly, he said.
A party?
Wendy couldn't believe her ears.
Yes. Thai curry chicken and prawns, he said proudly.
Well, good for you.
She sounded grudging and astonished, and a little lonely.
You're very welcome. I'd love to see you again, Wendy, said Stephen White to his ex-wife.
In about an hour's time, then. That would be great, she said.
And George came back to say that it was shaping up as a fine party, but they should really think of getting their skates on.
And, as he had collected 5 different bottles already, perhaps they should open one for the sheer conviviality of it all.
Jenny Agutter reading The Feast of Stephen by Maeve Binchy. The producer was Pam Fraser-Solomon.